Torah to Go is the weekly Torah CD of the Skokie Community Kollel, sponsored this year in memory of Shmuel Nachman ben Pinchas Herschel and Hannah bar Shimshon. And the Divrei Torah you're about to hear have been recorded by members of the Kollel. We hope you enjoy and learn from these Divrei Torah.
This is Yaakov Goldstein. In this week's Parsha, we're told about the death of Miriam, and Chazal tell us that in the merit of Miriam, Klal Yisrael had the Be'er Miriam, had the well, which provided water throughout their years in the desert. But now, when Miriam passed away, there was no longer this well to provide their water. And Klal Yisrael complained. He said, how are they going to live without any water? They're taken out to the desert to die. At which point, Hashem commands Moshe and Aaron, V'dibartem el ha'sela, that they should speak to the rock. And we know the famous incident that occurred, that Moshe and Aaron gathered the people, and Moshe said, Shimuna hamorim, listen up, rebels. And at that point, he hit the rock. There's a machlokas between many of the commentators as to what the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu actually was. Of the more famous opinions is Rashi, which says that Moshe's sin, his chait, was that he struck the rock. Moshe hit the rock, and that's why he wasn't able to go into Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, also quoting the Rambam, says it's because he said this statement, Shimu no hamorim, listen up, rebels. He was chastising Klal Yisrael, he was rebuking them, and that was the sin. The Kedushas Levi explains that the reasons of Rashi and the Ramban are really the same. Kedushas Levi explains that a leader, in order to rebuke his people, has two options. Either he can tell them of their greatness. Klal Yisrael, you are such a holy nation. Your neshamas come from underneath God's throne. Everything you do, all the mitzvahs, all the great things that you do, Klal Yisrael gets, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets so much pleasure from Klal Yisrael. And this would uplift their spirits to make them actually want to do Hashem's will, want them to do better when they realize how every mitzvah, every great thing that they do affects Shemayim and brings HaKadosh Baruch Hu such great pleasure. And if they do the opposite, if they sin, it brings HaKadosh Baruch Hu sadness. When a person realizes their greatness, they're much more willing to want to achieve what their greatness could be. That's one way that a leader could help entice their community, or the B'nai Yisrael in our case, to do better. But obviously there's another way of rebuking them, and telling them harshly that they're doing wrong, they're complaining, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So the Kedushas Levi explains that that's what happened in this case. As the Ramban said, that Klal Yisrael was chastised by Moshe Rabbeinu, and in a harsh way, Shimu no hamorim, listen up, rebels. They were not told how great they were. And we know that everything in this world was created for Klal Yisrael's benefit. Everything was made for us to use. And this was how things were set up in the beginning of creation. We know many, many examples. The Yamsuf splitting was part of the creation of the world. The Yarden in the times of Yeshua splitting. Different miracles that were supposed to happen. The crack in the ground for Korach to fall into was all part of the original creation of the world. Everything in the world was created for Klal Yisrael. And if Moshe Rabbeinu would have talked to Klal Yisrael in a way that would have showed their greatness, then everything in the world would have wanted to serve or be used by Klal Yisrael for the service of Hashem. Even inanimate objects would want to help and assist Klal Yisrael and do what they were put into the world for doing. And in this instance, the rock, which was supposed to bring forth water, should have wanted to bring forth water by Moshe just talking to it. But instead, it didn't want to, because it was ashamed of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up for. Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be Bartim El Asel, supposed to speak to the rock and say, you know, Klal Yisrael are amazing. Hashem created them for His purpose to be the Ama Nivchar. And if Moshe would have told the rock, as he was supposed to, of all the greatness of Klal Yisrael, then the rock would have been willing to give up its water. And that's what it means, the Dibartim El Asela. Moshe should speak to the rock about the greatness of the Jewish people, and then it would give off water. But since Moshe Rabbeinu chastised them, and Shimuna Amori listed up rebels, the rock didn't want to give off its water. And that's why he actually had to hit the rock himself, to give off the water. And if Moshe would have done it properly, none of this would have happened. And that's how the Kiddushas Levi explains that really the reasons of Rashi and the Ramban are the same. If Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have chastised the Jewish people by calling them rebels, then he would have never had to come to hitting the rock. Because if he would have spoken to the rock and said properly how Jewish people are so great, the rock would have been more than willing to open up and give water to let the Jewish people drink from. This is Mordechai Mamutchik. Among the tragedies which could befall Klal Yisrael is the mitzvah of tzaddikim, is the death of righteous people, of righteous leaders of Klal Yisrael. And as we know that the mitzvah of tzaddikim is mechaperes, it atones, but yet the special person is no longer with us. And in this week's parsha, we read about not only the mitzvah, the death of Miriam Hanaziah, the sister of Moshe Rabbeinu. We also read of the death of Aaron HaKohen. And the Torah tells us that when Aaron HaKohen died, all of Klal Yisrael mourned for Aaron for 30 days. Vayivko es Aaron shloshim yom kol beis Yisrael. Every Jewish person, male and female. Says Rashi ha'anashim v'hanashim, the men and the women. Rashi explains, v'vishahaya Aaron rodef shalom u'matal ava ben baldi meriva u'ben ish li'ishto. Because Aaron had a special nature to him, and he pursued peace, and he was able to create situations and recreate situations of friendship between two people that were arguing, and matrimonial harmony between husband and wife. And therefore all of Klal Yisrael mourned for Aaron HaKohen. But yeah, we could wonder. At the end of the Chumash in Parshas Vezos HaBrocha, the Torah tells us about the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayivku b'nei Yisrael es Moshe b'arvus Moav, shloshim yom. Klal Yisrael cried for Moshe Rabbeinu again for 30 days. But it doesn't say anything that it was all of Klal Yisrael. So what's the difference? So again, we said Rashi with us and Parshas Chukos explains one answer is that Aaron was a Rodef Shalom, and Moshe didn't have this specific trait. He had other issues and other things that he needed to deal with. The Orach Chaim in Parshas Zabrocha asks this question. And he quotes an interesting answer from the Ibn Ezra. He says like this, that the Ibn Ezra says that Klal Yisrael cried for Aaron for 30 days to honor Moshe who was still alive. Interesting. The respect for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe survived his brother, and therefore for Moshe to see that his brother was mourned in this way was a sign of respect and of hishtatfus, of joining together with the pain of Moshe Rabbeinu. All of Klal Yisrael said, "We're joining with you, Moshe Rabbeinu." But the Orach Chaim says he doesn't like it. That's the reason why Klal Yisrael did it. Why didn't they do the same thing for Moshe Rabbeinu? And Moshe Rabbeinu died. So the Orach Chaim suggests a number of possible solutions to this question. The Orach Chaim says, what was the difference? When we look at the difference in the death of Moshe and the death of Aaron, the death of Aaron was much more sudden. The death of Moshe Rabbeinu was, Klal Yisrael was prepared for it. It wasn't sudden. Klal Yisrael knew when Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die. Moshe Rabbeinu began preparing Klal Yisrael much time beforehand for his eventual passing. Everything was taken care of. And therefore, Klal Yisrael had come to grips with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to pass. But Aaron died with a shock. And it was almost tragic. His life was just interrupted. And because of that, that gave them a heightened sense of avelus, a heightened sense of grief, which caused them to mourn for a longer time. As a result of Aaron's death, those brachas, which were as a result of Aaron, left. The Anami HaKavod disappeared. And in fact, the protection of these special Anonim, these special clouds of glory, caused a situation where the enemies of Klal Yisrael could come and attack. And for that, Klal Yisrael mourned. And even though, in the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu, those Anonim returned, but yet, it wasn't the same. And maybe you'll ask, says the Orach Chaim, that after Moshe Rabbeinu, they also went away. But Klal Yisrael, they knew that they were going into Eretz Yisrael right away. And therefore, they had that joy which tempered the feeling of the histalkus of the Anami HaKavod. Also, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, there was an immediate successor. Yeshua took the place of Moshe Rabbeinu. The son of Moshe set and the son of Yeshua rose. And even though when you compare Yeshua to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's almost incomparable. It's like the moon to the sun, but yet there was a replacement. And even though there was a replacement for Aaron HaKohen, Elazar, Aaron's son, filled the role of the Kohen Gadol. But as Rashi says, there was many other roles that Aaron HaKohen played. And those were not replaced. And that's why every single person of Klal Yisrael mourned for Aaron HaKohen.
This is Yechiel Besser. Parshas Chukas begins with the pasuk Zois Chukas HaTorah. This is the Chayk of the Torah. A bit later on, and when the Torah is describing at length the specifics of Tumas Meis and its Tahara, so in pasuk Yudalid, the Lashon of the pasuk is Zois HaTorah Adam Ki Yamus Boil. This is the Torah, Adam Ki Yamus Boil. So the Gemara has a famous drasha that the Gemara explains that, not in Pashup Shop, but more as a drash, that Zois HaTorah, this is the essence of the Torah, Adam Ki Yamos Boil. That the Torah is only Niknus was only acquired by somebody whose name is Atzmei Olav. So in other words, Zoyis HaTorah, this is the Torah Adam Kiyomus. If you, so to speak, kill yourself over the Torah, you give up of yourself, of your energy, and of your life, of your desires for the Torah, then you will have the Torah. So the question is, obviously, Chazal make many drushos from different psukim, but clearly this is not the simple pshat in the pasuk. It's just a remez. It's a little bit of a hint of an idea that the way to acquire Torah is through giving up of yourself. But why is that within the parasha of Tumas Meis? Well, what's it doing over here? You know, let's find a way for Chazal and for the Torah to hint to us the proper way to learn and acquire Torah in the parasha of Yisro and the parasha of Matan Torah. What's its connection to Tumas Meis? So I believe, and the idea I heard from a Rebbe of mine in the Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, I believe we could explain as follows. That really there's another drasha that Chazal make from this week's parsha, from the wording of Adam. Chazal say that Atam Kriyan Adam, Ve'ein Umas Olam Kriyan Adam. Klal Yisrael is called, titled with the phrase of Adam, and Umas Olam are not. So much so that the Gemara actually uses this idea to make differences in the way that a goy causes Tumas Meis to a Yid, because the Torah always uses Adam and Klal Yisrael is called an Adam. How do we understand that statement? Of course, a non-Jew is a human being, somebody you have to respect and show the utmost consideration for their lives, for their property. What does it mean that we are Adam and they are not? So I believe the answer is really based on the ideas of the Ramchal and Derech Hashem, which, in short, to explain is that we have to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world for a purpose. And the purpose was, the Mefarshim say, is for him to be meitiv, to do good to his creation. What is the ultimate good? The ultimate good is Olam Haba. All the enjoyments in this world are nothing compared to the enjoyment of Olam Haba, which is the ultimate closest to Hashem. However, how do you get to Olam Haba? The only way to get to Olam Haba is through going through the trials and tribulations of this world, through going through the nisyonis of this world. But therefore, that teaches us that if one would ask, so what is the purpose of this whole world? What is the purpose of creation? The purpose of creation is to create a playing field for a human being to be able to get to Olam Haba. Well, there's a little bit of a catch, that you can only get to Olam Haba if you possess the full neshama and the full Torah to therefore go through those trials and tribulations and to be able to acquire, to elevate yourself to get there. And due to Chet Adam Rishon and many other things which the Ramchal explains, but the bottom line is now the way the Bria is situated is that only Klal Yisrael, only we have that neshama and have that Torah, which allows us to therefore ultimately make it through this world and get to the next world. So therefore, I believe that's the pshat in the Gemara, the Atem Kriyim Adam, the Umas Olam Einim Kriyim Adam. The reason why we are called Adam is because at this point in creation, we are the people that have the neshama and the Torah to therefore justify the whole human race. To be called the Adam of the Adam Arishain, the reason for the creation of the world. Therefore, if we take that understanding, we could go a little deeper and realize what Chazal are coming to tell us. What is Tumas Meis? Did the Meis do anything wrong? Obviously not. A person does not choose to die. Death happens by itself. So what is it about Tumas Meis that it's called the Avi Avos HaTumah? Really, the father of fathers, the ultimate Tumah. Other tumas come due to averis, or through impure discharges from the body. We would think maybe those things seem more contaminated. What is it about a mace that is the via avos hatuma? So the answer is because a mace is a guf without a neshama. The guf without a neshama, just the gashmis without the connection to the ruchnis, that is the via avos hatuma. That is the opposite of the creation of the world. That is how the tuma comes and gravitates towards that. That's a terrible thing. When there is a goof just this world without any connection to the next world, so we've lost the purpose of creation. Now, obviously, we believe and we know in Tchias HaMeisim where ultimately the goof will be rejoined with the neshama. But at the point of death, we just see a goof without a neshama. That is tuma. Just gashmius, without any purpose at all, that is terrible. And that's the remez, that's the hint of Adam ki yom espoil, that zois chukas ha-Torah, that ein Torah niknas ela misha memes atzmei aleo. And it's specifically in this parsha of Tumas Hames that the Torah teaches us that the highest form of Tumah is just the guf, without any connection to the neshama, just the guf, just the idea that this world is just here to enjoy, I'm not doing anything wrong, and there's no purpose, there's no connection to a neshama, there's no longing and wanting to go to a higher world and to become a higher being. That is Tumah. That's what you understand. Therefore, you understand why Torah can only be nicknessed a Misha Memes Atzmeila. What does Misha Memes Atzmeila mean? It doesn't mean literally that one has to kill themselves. It means that one has to give up of their desires. Yes, you want to get a full connection to Torah, to mitzvahs, to elevate yourself. You have to give up. You have to be willing to sacrifice on your worldly desires. If the question is going to be, well, what's wrong with this? I'm not doing anything wrong. This has a good hashkacha, or this is clean fun. What's the problem? If that's going to be the attitude, yes, there might not be anything wrong with this specific action, but if you don't leave yourself enough time and enough energy to learn the Torah, to acquire the Torah, to make yourself a better person, it's not going to happen by itself. So if you're just preoccupied and you don't have that clarity, that Atam Kriyam Adam, we are the people on this world, we are the purpose of creation, to take things in this world to elevate ourselves, and if instead the attitude is, listen, as long as I'm not doing anything wrong, what's the big deal? That attitude will not connect you to the Torah. That attitude will not make you be the Adam, the purpose of creation. You'll just be Umas Olam. Yes, you're living a nice life, a good life, a moral life, but you're not striving to get to the next level, which is Olam Haba. That's the lesson. That's Chukas HaTorah. That is the ultimate Choyk of the Torah, the foundation of what separates us, Klal Yisrael, from Umas Olam. Have a good Shabbos.
This is David Zirkin. In this week's parsha, Parshas Chukas, we have another incident where Klal Yisrael falls, and this time they were complaining about the man, as the pasuk tells us, "Vayedaber ha'am." The nation spoke, "Be'elokim u'be'moshe, why do you take us out of Mitzrayim? Here we are. All we have to eat is lechem haklokel. It's not sustainable bread. How could we live off this? What are we going to do?" And as a result of this complaint, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends the snakes, which a number of Klal Yisrael perished as a result of this. And then when they return to Hashem by doing teshuva, Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to place a copper snake, and when they would look at it, they would be healed. The question here is, how do we understand the punishment of the snake? Mida keneged mida is the way Hashem works, and they complained about the man, so why is it, what is mida keneged mida, that their punishment should be via the snake? So to this, Rashi explains that let the snake, who was punished as a result of speaking, earlier when he spoke, earlier in the Chumash, when he enticed Chava to do the sin of the Eitz Hadas, he committed an Avera through speaking, and pay off these people who are sinning also with their mouth, with speaking. Another explanation Rashi gives, that let the snake, which its punishment of the snake was from the sin of the Eitz Hadas, that whatever he would eat would taste like sand. So let him punish those who complained about the man, because remember, eating the man was such a good thing that you were able to eat and get any taste you want. So mida keneged mida, they're complaining about the man, which everything that they wanted it to taste like had that taste. They should be paid off by the snake, which his punishment was that whatever he eats, it will taste like sand. He lost the ability to taste. The Sefer Nezirus Shimshon gives another explanation to this question of what is the mida keneged mida for being punished as a result of the snakes. So, as we mentioned, the Rei Rashi explained that when they complained about the man, part of their complaint was that it gets absorbed in our body and we do not have to relieve ourselves. Is it possible that a person could live such a way, just take in without relieving? And look all over the world. Is there any creature like that? So must be. Eventually we're going to explode. And that was their complaint. Now, in their statement, they're saying, take a look throughout the creation. Is there any creature like that? And the truth is, there is a creature like that, which is, as Chazal tell us in the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis, that it's Yatush, the mosquito. It's light. It's a light creature. It's able to take in, and it does never have to relieve itself. So, with this in mind, what was Klal Yisrael's question? Is there such a creature exist? Yeah, there is. Take a look. So, just what? So, the Bnei Yisrael, by sinning with this question, complaining about the man, they pretended as if this creature, this mosquito, doesn't exist in the world. It's not there. So, what did Kadosh Baruch Hu do? Against their will, they would have to look and search for the mosquito. By striking them with the snake, and we know what's a medicine, as the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Beis tells us, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu created is for a good purpose. And what's the purpose of a mosquito? So Rashi explains over there that if someone is bitten by a snake, he could take a mosquito and cut it in front of, on the wound, and he would be healed. So, Mida Kenegan Mida, they tried to deny the fact that a mosquito doesn't exist, and here we are, eating the food, and not having to relieve ourselves, which is dangerous, we're going to explode one day, since there's no other creature in the world like that, denying the existence of the mosquito. So against their will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the punishment of the snake, the Mida Kenegan Mida, that they would have to come onto the mosquito to use it as a medicine to heal them. And after Klal Yisrael does Teshuvah, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to create a copper snake that whenever they will get bitten by it, they would look up to it and be healed. And the purpose of this was to show that it's not the snake, that does the damage or that heals. All it is the will of Hashem, that when they would look up at the snake and at the copper snake and purify their hearts, Mishabdinus Libam, Lavim Shabashamayim, only then would they be healed. And that's the purpose of refuah, of creating the idea of medicine. That even though we have medicine that we use, we still need to not put our trust in the medicine. Because come to think of it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have said they should look up to heaven and daven to Hashem and be healed. Why was it a copper snake to be put up? So this was also to give strength, to strengthen Klal Yisrael's emunah, that even though by looking at the snake, seemingly the strength of looking at it is able to heal, and nevertheless, they were mevatel that from their heart. They did not think about as if the snake is the one that's healing them. Rather, they looked up and davened to Hashem and realized that it's Hashem, the only one who is healing us. And with that alone, they were healed. So for us also, as much as we are obligated to go to a doctor, we are obligated to take the proper medicine which is subscribed to us, but at the same time, we are not to believe in it at all, that that's what's causing the refuah, but rather it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's the one who's healing us.
This is David Sikanek. This week's parasha, we read about the further travails of Bnei Yisrael. And the pasuk says, Vayisu mehor ahar, the Bnei Yisrael traveled from Hor ahar after the death of Aaron. Vatikzar nefesh ha'am baderech, and the people became agitated on the way. Vaydabar ha'am b'elokim v'moshe, and they spoke against Hashem and Moshe. Lama heli sunu Mitzrayim, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? Lamus ba'midbar, to die in the desert, ki ein lechem. Vein mayim, there's no bread and there's no water. V'nafshenu katzav alechem aklokel. And we are disgusted by this insubstantial bread. That's how they referred to the man. And as a punishment for this complaint, for repaying Hashem's kindness with ingratitude, Hashem sent Nechashim HaSrafim, venomous snakes, and they bit the people, and many people died. And Israel came to Moshe, and they said, "We have sinned. Daven to Hashem, they should take away these snakes." So Hashem says to Moshe, "Aseivacha saraf, make a model of a snake, v'sim oso al nes, and put it on a pole. V'haya kol hanashuch v'ra oso v'chai, and anyone who is bitten will see it and live." Next pasuk, "Vayas Moshe nachash nachoshet, and Moshe made a snake out of copper. V'yasimeu al nes, and put it on the pole. V'haya im nashach hanachash es ish, if a man was bitten by a snake, v'hi bit al nachash hanachoshes, he would look at that copper snake, v'chai, and he would live." And there are many questions you could ask about this incident and about these psukim. But the most basic of questions is asked by the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, who famously draws a parallel between this incident and another one, earlier in Chumash, where Klal Yisrael is fighting against Amalek after leaving Mitzrayim, and Moshe Rabbeinu stands on the mountain and raises his hands. And as long as his hands were raised, Klal Yisrael were winning the war. And the Mishnah says, on the pasuk, "V'haya kasher yari Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael," when Moshe raised his hands, the Jewish people are winning. "V'chi yado shal Moshe osos melchama ushovros melchama," do the hands of Moshe determine whether the war will be won or lost? "Ela lo marlach," it means this, "kol zman shahayu Yisrael mistaklim klapi mala," as long as the Jewish people raise their eyes to the heavens, "umeshabdim es libam la'avim shebashamayim," and they dedicated their hearts to their Father in heaven, "hayu miskabrim," that would cause them to win, "v'im lav hayu noflim," and if not, then they would fall. And the Mishnah continues, "kayota badavar ata omer," similarly we find, "aseva chasaraf v'simo sal nes," over here, the Moshe is commanded to make a snake, and anyone that will look at that snake, he will live. Ask the Mishnah, "V'chi nachash memis, o nachash mechaya," would that snake up on that pole, would does that cause death or cause life? "El bizman shiyisrael mistakum klapimala," when the Jewish people would look heavenward, "umishad mislibam la'avim shebashamayim," they would dedicate their hearts to their Father in heaven, "hayu misrapim," then they would be healed, "v'im lav hayu nemokim," and otherwise, they would not. So the Mishnah tells us clearly, it's not Moshe's hands that caused them to win the war, and it's not the snake which causes the healing. But when the Jewish people look up at this symbol, and that reminds them that their strength, that their victory, that their life depends on Hashem helping them, then indeed they will be successful, they will be victorious. They will live. But if that's the case, then why make a model of a snake? If the whole point is just so that they raise their eyes heavenwards, why are you making a snake of all things? And also, if the purpose of this snake is just to get them to lift their eyes to heaven, why does the pasuk say, "V'hi bit el nechash hanechoshes v'chai"? The word lehabit means to look intently. Why are they staring at this snake? That's not the purpose. They should just glance upward and then focus their mind on Hashem. Why would they need to stare at this snake? So Rashi does tell us the difference between the first pasuk, that when Hashem tells Moshe, "Kol hanashuch v'ra'ah oso v'chai," that someone who is bit will see it. Just the word ra'ah means a glance. And he will live. The difference between that and the second pasuk that says v'hi bit, that they have to stare at it. So Rashi says that the first pasuk means that someone which is bit by any animal, then they merely have to glance at the snake. And then as the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah told us, that would cause them to focus their thoughts on Hashem, and they will daven appropriately, and they will be healed. But the second pasuk that says they have to stare at the snake, that's when they're actually bit by a snake. Then they need to be bit on the chash and achoshes, and then they will live. But even with this explanation, the difference between vera'ah and vihibit, the question still remains. Why, if someone is bit by a snake, does he have to stare at the snake if the purpose is just for him to raise his eyes heavenward? So the Ramban gives one reason. He says that it is a nes besoch nes. It's a greater nes because, he says psychologically, if someone stares, thinks about the very thing which is causing him harm, it can cause him greater harm. And therefore Hashem said, I will show you that this is a completely miraculous healing, and you will stare, you will contemplate the snake, the thing that is causing you harm, and you will be healed. But I think there may be another reason, another purpose for them to stare at the snake. And this is based on the Rashi that says as follows. Why was it that Hashem, as a punishment for their complaints, for their ingratitude towards the good that He had provided for them, sent snakes to bite them? Why specifically snakes? So Rashi says, Yavo nachash, let a snake come, shekol haminim nit'amim lo tam echad, that all food tastes the same to a snake. There's only one taste. V'yipara mikifuye tova, and he will take retribution from those ungrateful people. Shedavar echad mishtana lahem lekama ta'amin, that one situation appears to them to have many causes, many reasons. The word in Hebrew, ta'am, means taste, but it also means reason. What does this mean? It means someone that is ungrateful will refuse to look at the prime cause of something because that will make him indebted. And therefore will say, oh, it was because of this and because of this, and this also contributed and this helped, and this is why. Instead of seeing clearly that someone brought about this and he owes him his gratitude. He's always looking for kama ta'amim. He's always looking for many causes in order not to be indebted. So Hashem sent against them a snake, which only has one ta'am, only has one taste. Because these people need to realize that there is only one ta'am. There's only one reason, and there's one cause, and that is Hashem. He is the cause behind all causes. And if this is the lesson they have to learn, then when these people are bit by the snake, v'hibit el nachash hanachoshes, they have to look at that snake and think, why was I bitten by a snake? What did I do wrong to deserve this? And they'll remember, I was ungrateful. Hashem did so much for me. He gave me the man. He led me through this desert and supplied my every need. And yet I complained, and I couldn't express the most basic gratitude for the greatest kindness. And by staring at this nachash, and by contemplating the message, then, indeed, they will turn their eyes and their thoughts heavenward. And they will recognize Hashem and His infinite goodness. And they will do teshuvah, and they will be healed. Because this is a lesson to them, and to us, that it's Hashem who is the only ta'am, who is the only cause, who is the reason behind all reasons for everything that happens to us. And it's to Him alone that we have to feel the ultimate level of gratitude.
This is Aaron Rosenberg. This week's Parsha, Parshas Chukas, contains interesting and unusual events, and also several songs that the Jewish people sang when they were in the Midbar. They sang a song about the digging of the wells. And at the end of Pasuk Yud Ches, it says, "Umemidbar matana," and they went from the wilderness a gift, "Umatana nachliel," And from the gift they went to a valley, Umanachliel Bomos, and from the valley they went to the heights. This is the song that they sang. So the Chazal understand that this song is really referring to Torah study. That if a person makes himself like a desert, like a midbar, then he'll be given Torah as a gift, matana. And that's why it says, midbar matana. If a person makes himself like a midbar, he'll receive a gift, the matana. Once he receives the Torah, he'll require an inheritance with Hashem. He'll have a nachliel. He'll have a nachel. A nachel is an inheritance of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And then he'll be raised on high. He'll go to Bamos. Bamos are high places. And that's the continuity of these verses. Midbar, matana, matana, nachliel, nachliel, Bamos. So let's take a look at these steps that the song is hinting to. First of all, what's the idea of making oneself a midbar? How does oneself make himself a desert? And they say that he makes himself hefker. He makes himself ownerless. What does that mean to make oneself ownerless? Now, when a person has property and he wants to make it ownerless, so a person says, this object is hefker. There's a question in the Gemara exactly how hefker works. According to one opinion, hefker works that it still belongs to me, yet I'm allowing anyone to make a kinyan on it if they want to. Anyone can acquire it if they would like. And that's the idea of your hefker by Torah. What does that mean? That a Torah teacher should not just throw out the concepts and let his students hopefully pick them up. No, no. When a person's teaching Torah, he should be holding on to them. He should still be his. But the students can grab onto it if they understand. Then they can acquire it on their own. But that's the idea of being hefker when it comes to Torah. It means that you have the Torah to teach, but the Torah has to be acquired while it's still connected to you. In a similar way, we find that Bahaloschas and Neros, when you raise up the Neros, and the idea there also is that the idea of Bahaloschas, when you raise it up, that means to say that you have to keep that match continually on the flame until it gets going. And the same thing, when a person has students, he should continue his involvement with this idea and this Torah concept until the students really understand it. Not just throw out the Torah and hope they pick it up. Perhaps there's another idea one can say about this idea of hefker. That one should make himself hefker, that means that one should make himself available to all, no matter what level the student is on. And therefore, he should have a humility and make himself hefker in that sense. A person shouldn't think that there are students that are beyond his honor and distinction to teach. If a person's coming to learn, then he should make himself accessible, hefker like the desert. And that humility will then allow him to receive the Torah as a gift, because once a Kodesh Baruch Hu sees that this is a good receptacle for Torah, because he's a humble person, then he receives a matana, he receives a gift. That's the second stage. Midbar and matana. A person acts like a midbar, he's humble, he'll receive the Torah as a gift. Once he receives the special gift, then he'll be a nachliel, he'll inherit the Torah. What does that mean? That means that the Torah that he creates will be considered his. It'll be an inheritance to him, intrinsic and important. As we say, the idea of Toroso, it's his Torah. It's Hashem's Torah. But once a person claims it as his, then it becomes a nachliel, intrinsic and permanent. Once a person has received these tremendous connections to Hashem through the Torah, he's made himself hefker. He's received the Torah as a gift. It now becomes a part of him. So then, having received the special Siyata D'Shmaya, he'll receive even more Siyata D'Shmaya, and that he will be protected from sin. He'll come to proper conclusions in Halacha. And that's what is meant by the last stage, Bamos. He'll come to the level of Bamos. This is the idea we see from the Zera Shimshon, that a person is not enough just to learn, it's not enough just to teach, it's not enough. A person also has to be protected from sin, and to be able to formulate the proper ideas, you know, these all need, especially Siyata D'Shmaya, for Shem Yisrael Bizocha to attain this tremendous level in Torah.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you have enjoyed and learned from these Divrei Torah. To hear other shiurim from the members of the Skokie Community Kollel, please access the podcast at skokiekollel.org. For any comments, critiques, or to sponsor A Week of Torah to Go, please contact the Kollel at 847-674-7959 or at info@skokiekollel.org.